This episode of The Next Step is made possible through a grant from Harutyun Kelejan. End of the year, and we've got a sign that you might not expect to see, or maybe it's the sign of the times. That's coming up, as well as the AC101 viral connection, and how stupid can people be? This is Father Voskin, priest of the Armenian Church, connecting the dots between the spirit, the emotion, the physical, the psychological. This is episode number 447 of The Next Step.
This is Susie from In His Shoes, welcoming you to our ninth year of broadcasting The Next Step. The Next Step is a step, a stride, moving us forward. Here, Father Voskin provides his unique and distinctive voice for Armenian Orthodoxy, giving an intelligent and practical answer to the challenges of life, based on the solid principles of love, faith, and hope as expressed by Jesus Christ. It's a practical approach to melding spirit and passion in the real world. The Next Steps are serious, fun, informative, and most of all relevant, as religion should be. So get ready. We're taking the next step.
It was completely unexpected. Yeah, a sign in front of the Catholic Church. It's one of the routes I take in the morning. I have a few different routes I do for my morning walk. And this morning, went by the Assumption Catholic Church, and I saw this sign. Just kind of hit me. It's not really a sign for the church. It's a sign of the times. And, you're going to have to wait. We're going to put it at the end of the show, because it kind of like fits in with everything else we're talking about. A sign of the times. But right now, let me just say, welcome. Glad you're with us. Today is the last show of the year of 2016. And I am still battling a small little cold. You could probably feel it in my voice. And if occasionally I have to hit the mute button, you'll know why. There's just that little bit of silence inside this podcast. I am glad that you are with us. We have a great show for you today. I want to not only talk about the year-end usual stuff that we go through, but also share with you something that caught us off guard, completely off guard last Sunday as we went to celebrate Christmas in the church, right? Christmas, you know, the Father Voskin formula that we celebrate Christmas all the time. In fact, this morning, what is today? It's the 29th. It's like 4 days off of Christmas. I got a call last night from a wonderful lady who lives out in San Bernardino. And that's about a good hour drive from Los Angeles. And she called and she said, "We missed the toy drive, but all of my kids," she's a school teacher, "all of my kids have collected toys and they want to make sure that these get out there." So, it fits, right? It fits right into the formula. It is the 29th, and we celebrate Christmas when? Every single day of our life. So I said, sure, bring them down. So this morning I met with her and her husband. They brought down three big boxes of toys, holiday good cheers, and we'll make sure that they get out to the kids. And it's important that we remember that it's not just about a December 25th event that takes place. Christmas, if you're really legitimately going to celebrate it, has to be celebrated every single day. And that's why I want to start off today, because something very unusual happened this week when we put out our AC101 video. You know, we put these out, we were doing them once a week, now we're down to once a month or anything. This one went viral. We put it out last Friday, and by within 48 hours, we had something like 50,000 hits. It's averaged, I figure, about 1,000 an hour. By the end of the weekend, we were at 80,000. I believe this morning it's climbed up very close to 100,000. So it's been kind of exciting to watch these numbers go up. But even more interesting and eye-opening for me are the messages that come with them. And yeah, you have your traditional people who just don't get it. And, you know, we even had people that they're talking about, like, what's wrong with you celebrating Christmas? Don't you understand? This is the worst thing you can do. Christ came and he destroyed, blah, 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 blah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know, all you got to say is, you got to say, Wurachim, because you're not going to change that person's mind. You know that, right? You know that you can't change these people's mind. They're just so hell-bent on this is the way it's going to be, and this I have the truth. But here's the interesting thing that got me, and I've shared this with you in the past. You wouldn't trust your car to a mechanic who just read a book, right? But somehow you trust religion to some guy who just said, hey, I'm going to read the Bible. Right? Think about it. You go to a mechanic and you say, I want to have my brakes fixed. And he says, okay, just let me read a book about it. And he reads a book and he says, okay, I'm going to do your brakes. Would you trust that? I mean, would you get in the car after that mechanic has worked on your brakes? And think about that for a moment. I put a few kids through school. Our oldest is an architect. Our second, he studied law. I mean, they study for years. I mean, my youngest, he studied engineering. Would you go on a bridge that somebody just said, hey, let me read a book about how to build a bridge, you know, and here's some tinker toys, and let me put it together? No, you go to school. You go to engineering. You learn about stresses. You learn about different materials. And so you put together this bridge. And when you put that bridge together, it's the knowledge of people before you, it's the knowledge that you've acquired, plus the knowledge, the firsthand knowledge of people that you're working with. In other words, you intern and you go through those steps before you have the legitimacy to go out there and practice and build a bridge, or fix some brakes, or practice law, or give somebody a checkup. I mean, every profession is like this. No matter what profession you look at, and I'm not just talking about those from the scholarly, I'm talking about even those that people acquire by skills, by apprenticing. A lot of different professions in this world, right? But they require some basic knowledge. They require some learning. They require some practice before they can master it. But for some reason, somebody could pick up a Bible and read it. Uh-huh. They read it, and now they've mastered religion. And they will tell you what's going on about it. It is fantastic how this works. And that's the mystery, and that's the mysticism of religion, right? Because it speaks to all of us in different ways. So the guy just picks up something, and he says, hey, this is it. And I want you to know what it is. And I will discount everybody else who has come before me. So we put out this AC 101 about Armenian Christmas. And basically, you know, if you've been on the Next Step, you know where I come from. These are just numbers. December 25th, January 5th. If you really think about shepherds out in a field, you're probably looking more like in spring or summer. Really, you know. But somehow through the years, feasts, these celebrations have had their corresponding calendar dates. And I went through this exercise of how it was used to be January 6th, and it was transferred in the West to December 25th. And that's just a question of history, you know, the winter solstice and everything. And there's quite a bit of documentation. You can certainly learn a lot more and delve right into it and understand the entire history by reading, by studying, right? Definitely you could do all that. But my contention is that this is AC 101. It's basically the first step in being part of the Armenian Church, understanding the Armenian Church. And this isn't about major history lessons. It's about a practical approach to faith. And what better way than to say that, hey, you know, It's not a question of celebrating Christmas on December 25th if you're going to forget about it December 26th, 27th if you're not going to have love on in your heart, or December 28th if you're going to throw it all out the bathroom window. Well, then what good is celebrating December 25th or January 6th, February 11th, whatever day it may be? And so I went ahead and I said that, you know, any day of the year, arbitrarily pick any day of the year, that day should be Christmas for the Christian, right? Jesus Christ is born. Jesus Christ is in our lives. Love has come into this world and has conquered evil. That, to me, is the Christian celebration, the Christmas celebration. Feliz Navidad. Shnoravur Surpzonunt. Whatever way you say it, you're celebrating the birth of something that was from the beginning of time. Okay? That's Christmas. And I went ahead and I said AC 101. Now you got people on there, coming in there, and they're like giving their little philosophies. I guess this is the loneliness of the world that we live in. You know, that people somehow feel like on Facebook we have to set things straight. And it's interesting. You know, people come, it's not just the Armenians that celebrate January 6th. I mean, did you miss the point, folks? You know, you're wrong. It's not just the Armenians. Well, listen to me, okay? For all the people that say the Russians celebrate January 7th, January 7th is celebrated by the Cyrillic tribes and I don't know what. Hey, get with the program. January 7th is 13 days off of December 25th. January 7th is December 25th on the old calendar. That's all. It's not January 6th. It's 13 days off. It's the difference between the Julian and the Gregorian calendar. That's it. Okay, so the Russians who celebrate January 7th as Christmas also celebrate Epiphany on January 19th. And you go to Jerusalem right now and you'll see that. The old calendar Christians, right? And the Russians do that. So don't start teaching me about, you know, dates. That's number one. Then the other thing is when people get on these things. Well, you know, in our tradition, we have Christmas on this day. And then on January 6th, that's the day that we celebrate the baptism. Okay, good. Urachem, man, I'm happy for you that you do this. But don't tell me what the faith of our church is. Do you get it? It's like, you're either going to accept that there are some people who have some knowledge before you, or you got to back off. But you can't do this other thing about, hey, I read a book, and so therefore I'm smarter than you. It's wild. It has been a wild, wild ride to just read some of these people, what they have to say. Others, well, you know, Jesus wouldn't like the way we celebrate Christmas. Okay. That's not the point of this video. That's not the point of AC 101. Yes, I agree with you. Jesus would be very upset with the way we celebrate Christmas. Did you notice the word that I used? The way we celebrate it. And by that, I'm not talking about Armenian church. The way we celebrate, the way the world celebrates. We all do. That's inclusive talk. But people are out there using exclusive talk. Jesus would be upset with the way you celebrate Christmas. Wait, what? Oh, I see. We're the wrong and you're the right. It's funny. It really is funny. But I'm putting it out there because I noticed that no other profession, you can't find any other profession where this holds true. You go through all that studying, you learn everything, and you find all that content, and you have it, and you want to deliver it, and then somebody comes along and says, well, no, this is the way it is. I need brakes on my car, you know? I'm going to take it to the mechanic who is qualified, who has a star on his window and says that, yes, qualified, I've been certified by the Academy of the Mechanics and so on and so on. And if somebody walks up to him and says, no, you're doing it wrong because, you know, I checked out this book from the library and it says that the master cylinder on the brakes should be on the other side. I'm going to go up to that guy and say, please, if you're going to spread your philosophy, do that, but away from my car. Away from me. Get away. And I don't know why we don't have the nerve to do this to people who come and intrude our space on religion, on matters of faith. This is my faith. I've put my seal on it. I'm telling you, this is what Armenian Orthodoxy is. Now, you may not agree with it. In fact, guess what? Most of the world doesn't agree with it. I'm fine with that. But this is what definition is. And so we get into this philosophical understanding right now. We start understanding that words have to have some meaning. So the definition, when I'm talking about Armenian church theology, there is a certain standard by which that's going to be addressed. Just like any other thing. This is what we believe. Now, you don't want to believe it completely. I understand. I'm not claiming to be the holder of exclusive truth either. This works for me. This works for me. And that's all that I can claim. I want to share it because people want to understand it. Certainly, there's a market for it by the numbers of these people. People are looking for these answers. Okay, so I put it out there and I share it. But this is the definition of it. And it's not up for a debate. Like, hey, don't you think that we should do it this? No. This is what the definition is. Okay? Just like any other thing, a notebook. A notebook is a pad of papers stapled together in a binder. Okay? Now, you can't come up and say, okay, a notebook is these papers plus a few sheets that we find in the trash and we put them together on top of it. That's not a notebook, right? The definition of notebook is that these sheets have to be bound together. And that's a notebook. Or anything. A clock is a device with two hands that spins around and measures time on a 24-hour basis. Whatever the definition is. You can't come in and say, and a clock also has a third hand that measures the path of Pluto around the solar system. Okay, that's not a clock. It's something else. It measures something. Okay, that's good that you've got some other idea there. But that's not what our understanding of a clock is. And we have to have some kind of basis for us to communicate and for us to understand. And so what we do on Armenian Church 101 is just basically give you the basics. So that as a preface to all of this, it has been a beautiful week. There's been a lot of beautiful things, and we have been celebrating Christmas, remembering Christmas in different ways, and including this little video that has gone viral, and I thank you all for making it go viral. Just kind of like sharing some of the frustration, though. Now, second portion of our show, I'm going to be sharing with you a beautiful, beautiful event that took place on Christmas, and it happens to be St. Stephen's Day, and I'll tell you how that all unfolded, and also have a little surprise, a little bit of, a surprise for me that I want to share with you. Also, we remember that the tragic passing of Carrie Fisher, tragic in the sense that it was a little bit too early, I know, that's not our call to make, but here was somebody who was really kind of working out a lot of stuff, had inspired a lot of people, not only through her Star Wars movies, but also in her writing, her philosophy. If you've done any of reading of her material, and especially a few years ago when she came out with Postcards of the Edge, I appreciate somebody being able to open up to that level. Anyway, she passed away this past weekend at the age of 60, and just yesterday we found out her mother, Debbie Reynolds, as she was preparing for her child's funeral, the stress of it all took her life too. And they say that the cause of death was broken heart, and understandably so. So our thoughts and prayers with both Carrie and Debbie Reynolds families, and people who have touched us in that big world of entertainment by touching the emotions, touching the inspiring emotions in our lives. So just noting that passing. Anyway, end of the year, Old Engzine. I'm going to play you a Bambir version. Played this a few years ago on New Year's. It's due for another playing, okay? Bambir from the Armenian Scotch album, Old Engzine.
Should old acquaintance be forgot? signs of auld lang syne. For auld lang syne, my dear, for auld lang syne, we'll take a cup of kindness yet for auld lang syne.
Забыть ли старую любовь и не грустить о ней? Забыть ли старую любовь и дружбу юных дней? За дружбу старую до дна, за счастье юных дней. С тобой мы выпьем, старина, за счастье юных дней. Ах, чем горох я смурана, анцал сура.
By Bambir. I love that version of it. I don't really care for the song too much. I did get a special love for the song from It's a Wonderful Life after watching It's a Wonderful Life, you know, at the end when they start singing that. That's when it really clicked to me. But I'd hear this every New Year's, and especially my dad was a musician. Aside from being a pharmacist of extraordinary abilities, he was a musician because of the love that he had for music. And many, many, many New Year's Eves, he would be out there playing in a troubadour folk ensemble, Armenian folk ensemble. And my mom would go with him. And we had occasion to go as children many times to be there where he was playing. And it was interesting because this folk ensemble playing Armenian music would always stop at New Year's and play this old Ang Syne melody, which we knew had something to do with New Year's, but never understood how or what it did. In fact, later on, now that I'm thinking about it, briefly, we toyed around with the idea of having a band. I think we were about 16, 17, must have been about then, because I was driving at that point, and my sister and myself and a few other friends, we put together a band called the San Diego Trio, although there was like three or four other people in it too, if I remember right. I don't know where the trio came in, because I think there was like five people. We had a tambourine guy and friends that would just kind of like hang with us. And our name was San Diego because San Diego Armenian community at that time was so small that they couldn't get musicians to come down there. So we went down there and we would play. And if I remember right, it was New Year's Eve. We played a few New Year's Eves down there in San Diego. And we played this song, Old Ang Syne. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. I think... does it work out into a waltz? 1, 2, 3, 1, 2. Anyway, whatever. We would play it, and that's where it comes from. That's where it comes from in my life. But I know that there's a big tradition to Old Ang Syne, and it is beautiful to hear Bambir. Bambir, this particular album, I've played it many times. It's called Armenian Scotch. They meld some of those ancient traditions and melody lines and riffs between the two cultures. And I've always promised you that I'm going to do a show just on that Scotch and Armenian mix. But I'm waiting to go to Scotland, and I'm hoping that it's going to be in this next year, in the coming year. That's one of the That's one of the hopes and dreams, to be out there in Scotland. And once I do that, then I know that we're going to be making that tie. Anyway, hope you enjoyed it. Auld Lang Syne, Bambeer is the band. There will be a link on today's show notes so you could check out the band and everything else about it. All right, we're going to switch gears. Yeah, we talked about sinking in that wormhole, in that rabbit hole, we should call it. You ever get in that habit of just reading, habit of the rabbit hole, of reading just all that junk that's out there on Facebook, on different social media. You go into it and you're like in a rabbit hole, you're lost. And yeah, sometimes you think about that as I was sharing with you. I'm reading these things. I'm going, wait, did everybody miss the point here? That Christmas should be every day. Isn't that the point? And instead they get off on these tangents. And I think it's more, it's easier to talk about, right, specific dates. And so it's understandable that they went off on those tangents. So let's leave that for right now. And go in a direction, well, that's going to lead us to that incredible sign that I saw. And kind of a year-end little special tease that I'm throwing out at you. But a sign that I saw at the church. A sign that really reflects more of the sign of the times. But let me start with what happened this past Sunday. It was Christmas. And, you know, like I said, you know, you celebrate Christmas all the time. So to me, it doesn't matter. December 25th, yeah, it's Christmas. I don't go crazy about it. I don't say today is Christmas. But you know, specifically, there are Christmas dates. And yes, you should celebrate the spirit of Christmas every day. But December 25th, you've got most of the world accepting it as Christmas. And so why not at least take advantage of the day and share the good news that Christ has been born and revealed among us. So we set off to church. We were going to the St. Peter Church in Glendale. That's where my sons are serve at the altar. My daughter-in-law plays the organ. And we said, let's be with the entire family. We got there to a very unique surprise. The priest, during his sermon, as he came up for the sermon, he said that today is St. Stephen's Day. And of course, you know that, it's a very special day for me. I was ordained a deacon on that day. It is the Feast of the Deacons. And he said, today is St. Stephen's Day. Now, you know that on a Sunday in the Armenian Church, you can't have a St. Stephen's Day. There are no saints' days. Well, Asvazadzin, there's the Assumption. But that's more of the event of the Assumption rather than Asvazadzin. But basically, when somebody says it's a saint's day, you know that it can't be on a Sunday. And obviously, for us, it's on the 26th this year. But it was a close enough Sunday, and it kind of like hit me in the wrong way that, you know, are you going to avoid calling Christmas Christmas? And he went off on St. Stephen's. But then he took a little turn, which was just truly, truly delightful for me. In a personal manner, in that he invited two of the deacons, one of which was my son. One was Deacon Shant, a wonderful young man who I was very honored to be his sponsor, and he serves, just really blew us out of the water with his remarks. He spoke in Armenian. My son, Vadajan, spoke in English and gave the sermon. And he tied up the entire themes of deacon, of serving, of St. Stephen's, and, of course, of Christmas. Rather than tell you about it, let him tell you about it. And luckily, as he was being announced, just in the nick of time, I had enough time to pull out my smartphone, turn on the recorder, and I got it for you. So here it is. Here is Deacon Vadajan on St. Stephen's Christmas and being a deacon.
Thank you for asking me to speak today. Today, as you all know, is the Western celebration of Christmas, and we all are familiar with the story of Christmas. Otherwise, we wouldn't be here. I'm going to speak for a few minutes about another holiday that takes place tomorrow. It's the Feast of St. Stephen, who was remembered as the patron saint of deacons. Dei Yoga asked me to speak on my experience as a deacon, so I'd like to do that in light of today being Christmas and the Christmas season overall. St. Stephen was one of the first deacons of the church. If you can read about it more in Acts in the Bible. He's specifically in Acts, they note that the first group of deacons, seven deacons, was ordained to take care of widows and to distribute food and charitable aid. St. Stephen, by this service, bore witness to Jesus and helped share love and compassion to his community. This was the role he was ordained to. The early deacons were ordained to take care of widows, distribute food, charitable aid, and distribute love to the community. Because of this bearing witness to Christ, he was ultimately killed and is remembered today as the first Christian martyr. Since those times, the role of the deacon has become more ritualized, and we play a bigger role in the liturgy Sunday to Sunday. I personally started my path towards becoming a deacon at age 6, holding candles at St. Andrew in Cupertino. Later, I learned many of the roles of the deacon at St. Gregory in Pasadena. And in 2003, I started serving here in Glendale, and where I was both ordained both subdeacon and deacon in this church. During Badarak, the role of the deacon is essentially to help the priest. It is the priest's job to bring the story and light of Jesus to the people, and in doing so, to elevate the people through faith. It is the job of the deacon to help the priest do his job. Two of the biggest ways that we do that, as you saw earlier today, is through the reading of the Bible, through the Gospel, and the procession of the chalice and preparing the gifts. Another unofficial job that we have is to teach the young guys and make sure that they're continuing on their path forward. Being a deacon on the altar is one way that I've found to help serve. Besides being a great responsibility, it is also a great opportunity to connect with people wherever I've gone. By simply showing up at churches around the world, I've been able to perform in the capacity of deacon in places I've lived and traveled. Cupertino, Pasadena, Glendale, Fowler, Yetem, New York, Arizona, Argentina, and even in Armenia. And all it took on my part was walking into the church, introducing myself to the priest, and saying, I'd like to help serve. Our church in Glendale has developed an identity around being service-based, always reaching out to the community and helping people in need. Oftentimes, our help goes to Armenians, and oftentimes our help goes to whoever's in our local community. During this last Thanksgiving, we distributed food to those who were hungry, and just this last week, we distributed toys and blankets to children who would not otherwise be getting gifts. On Wednesday, we had a group that sang in the hospitals, cheering up patients who would likely spend their Christmas in a hospital. In this way and through our programs throughout the year, our church has embodied the role of St. Stephen and the early deacons, distributing food and charitable aid to those in need. As we all go home today to celebrate Christmas, I encourage us all to not approach life with the attitude of what will I receive or what gifts will be given, but to approach everyday life with the attitude of the deacon and say, I'd like to serve.
So there you go. A little bit about St. Stephen's, a little bit about service, about the diaconate of what it means to serve. And as parents, that was a very special moment. It was the ultimate Christmas gift that we could have received to hear Vaudrejean's sermon. But in particular, there was this one portion where he said that he's been able to practice as a deacon, no matter where he's gone, wherever he's lived. As a student, he's been in Argentina. And what did he say? He said, it's been as simple as going up to the priest and saying, I wish to serve. And think about that model. Think about that, those few words, how important they are. But equally important is that there is an opportunity to serve. Now, you can find that by serving at the liturgy, but not everyone is called to serve at the liturgy, and not every place has the capability. I mean, imagine if you had 300-400 people serving at the liturgy. Well, that would be ideal, right? That's called congregation participation. But as a deacon, you can only have a certain number, just as at any divine liturgy, there's one officiant. There is one person celebrating the divine liturgy. We don't have that idea of co-celebrants. We don't have those co-celebrants. Oh, there's one. Anyway, what I'm getting at is that there's basically a number and you can't saturate it beyond that. So you need to have other opportunities. And this is why it's so important as churches that we understand that there is a ministry that goes beyond that Sunday to Sunday event that takes place. And certainly, as Varjan just mentioned, the portion in Acts, it's so true that the whole idea of diaconate began as a social ministry, began as a means of providing physical, tangible food for the people. There were communities, and it was the apostles who were out there preaching, and it wasn't, they didn't have enough time to tend to the physical needs of the community, and so they ordained the first group of deacons. So think about that when you go into a church and you see the deacons around the altar. They are serving at the altar, serving with the celebrant, but it needs to go beyond that because there is a physical need within the community, certainly through outreach programs to the homeless, outreach program to the hungry, to the destitute, to the poor. And this has been basic social teaching of the Christian church. And what my contention is, if you have, you're absent of that, then you don't, remember we were just talking about definitions a few minutes ago, right? Absence of those things. If you're not helping the poor, if you're not reaching out, then you cannot be defined within the Christian community as a Christian church, right? That's how basic it is. Now, yeah, I know people will argue with me on that, and you're free to argue on that point, but that's where it comes from. It comes from the time of apostolic times, and it comes to us from Holy Scriptures. Reaching out, helping other people. Okay, with that in mind, think about what happened over this past couple weeks. You heard about in Turkey, a Russian killed a Turk. Was it a diplomat or something happened in an art show? But here's the interesting thing. Those of you who have been listening to Next Step and know a little bit about my biography, know that there was a defining moment in my early childhood, and that was in connection with Gurken Yanikyan. I was, one of my first jobs was working for the Armenian Observer newspaper, and I was sent to go out to Santa Barbara, a good 2 hours away from Los Angeles, to go and get some details and follow this story that was breaking at that time in the early 70s. And it was a guy named Gurken Yanikyan, a survivor of the Armenian genocide, who assassinated point blank two Turkish diplomats. And what happened is on MSNBC, there was a coverage of the Turkish assassination 2016. And the journalist, the person covering it, whatever her qualifications are, I personally don't know this. The first time I've known about her is in light of this incident. Anyway, she gets up and she talks about, she's supposed to be reporting on what happened in 2016, and she goes back in time to the 1970s and talks about how Turks have been targeted by Armenian assassins, Armenian terrorists. Whoa! Look who's calling the kettle black. Is that the expression? Right? So, anyway, she goes back, and of course, this makes a lot of noise out there, and people are incensed that how could she, as a reporter, talking about an incident that's taken in 2016, go to the back and remember all these horrid events that happened back in the 1970s. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, we're talking about an earth-shaking moment, Turkish diplomat being shot, and all of a sudden everybody's attention is on that person. And it is defined as an event that captures the attention of the world. World-stopping news. That's the expression, that's a quote-unquote that she uses. Rachel Maddow in the report. I'll see. Yeah, we'll see if we can get on the show notes if we can get that little cut. Anyway, I don't even know if we'll put it on the show notes. It's just so ridiculous that she would even she would even consider that journalism. So anyway, so she talks about that and she says this is world stopping news, and that this Turkish diplomat was killed. And definitely, anybody who dies, let me go on record right now, anybody who dies, the killing of any person is a diminishing of us as a society. As has been said on countless different things, no man is an island, just for whom the bell tolls, so on and so on. I mean, we know that, right? All lives matter. In one way or another, we are all interrelated, interconnected. In fact, the very famous movie that we will be watching tonight, yes, I'm calling a small group over to our house this evening to watch, Jimmy Stewart, It's a Wonderful Life. I mean, isn't that the whole gist of the story, right? He finds out that, hey, what would life be like without me? Well, you know, my brother wouldn't have been saved. I wasn't there to save my brother. Therefore, my brother wasn't there to save the carrier that fell down during the war, and therefore hundreds of people drowned because I wasn't there to take care of my brother, and so on and so on. So every life somehow is connected to the other life. And so here this journalist, I don't know what she is. I'm sorry. Is she a journalist? Okay, anyway, we're looking it up right now. Anyway, this reporter, let's call her a reporter, talks about Rachel Maddow. She talks about the world stopping news. And it hit me so hard that day. I know this, but it hit me in a very unusual way. Perhaps because it was in Turkey. Perhaps because it was this person who had died over there. Perhaps because of my background. But it hit me that world-stopping news. A diplomat, a Turkish diplomat, is shot, and that is world-stopping news. Meanwhile, right across the border in Syria, we have innocents dying every day. We have bombings. We have children. We have hospitals that are blown apart. Those aren't world-stopping. We see innocent kids dying every day of cancer. And we're not brave enough to stand up and say that, hey, we have resources to bomb the hell out of each other. Why aren't we putting those resources into research, into finding cures, to save the most innocent of the innocents? World stopping. Why aren't we doing this kind of things? Where are our priorities? Well, we know that really MSNBC, we know that all of these networks, we know that all news gathering agencies are driven by what? To be able to sell products. Capitalism drives everybody. And so let's be honest with them, that when this lady gets up and talks about Armenian terrorists, it's to elicit a response that will sell more of the product. And it depends on the demographics and who she's trying to sell to. And basically all of the news that we're getting and we're being fed is tainted in one way or another by money, by capitalism, by the interests of the parties that produce them, and so on and so on. And meanwhile, who are the people that are getting hurt? Those who are on the low end of the totem pole, those little children, who have to deal with the ravages of war, those little children who have to see a death because of our inability to address the health issues of the day. I mean, we're talking about climate issues. And unfortunately, we now have a president who's going to be coming into office who is who thinks it's a joke. At least that's what he says. And hopefully he will turn around on this issue like he has on so many others. But it's interesting, you know, and during this past year, 2016, with all of the difficulties we've had, one of the big things that we've had, we've seen a reverse in some of the climate issues. Why? Because of the laws which we have passed. Why? Because as an international community, we have addressed those issues. Imagine what we can do when we start talking about real issues instead of fabricated issues of war that we are making up, that I cannot get along with you, and therefore we will deploy this many troops. And all of a sudden we have a new story coming up about a war that we have created, rather than talking about the news that should be at hand. And I say this because, especially this time of year, as we're sitting around Christmas time of year with the new year here, where is peace in the entire equation? Are we creating peace? Are we becoming those instruments of peace? We have opportunities every single day. When I say that Christmas is every single day, it's an opportunity to bring peace into the world. And this is why I get upset that we're sitting around and we are talking about the dates. And well, you know, in Italy, we do it this way. Well, in Mexico, we do it this way. And the Russians have another. Who cares? Who cares what day you celebrate? What you should care about is what you're celebrating. What you should care about is that Prince of Peace who's at the center of that celebration. And let me tell you, without that Prince of Peace, without Christ being at the center of that, everything else doesn't matter. All of this other hoopla that you do doesn't matter. And we have a church that is concerned more with hoopla than with the centrality of what it's all about. At that point, you've lost the definition. You've lost the right to be called a church, a Christian entity. The minute you start talking about war as if it's inevitable, instead of it's a possibility that you can stop that, you've lost that ability to dream. And so it becomes difficult, if not impossible, to bring about those realities of peace on earth until you can get back to that dreaming stage. And at the center of that dream, this is really important, maybe perhaps the biggest revelation that I've come to in my life, at the center of that dream has to be the person of Jesus Christ. Yeah. You see, Jesus Christ is the one who came and gave us this ultimate example of what love is. Love took on flesh. Love, which we understand from the beginning of all time, the creator of all that. God is love, right? We understand that all this that we understand as reality was set into motion because of love. And that love now takes on a human form. For our understanding, Jesus Christ is essential. He's essential to the peace process, to our harmony process, to our understanding one another, to us putting away our weapons and approaching each other with the hugs and the love that is essential if we're going to survive on this planet. And so it was that I saw a sign this morning. A sign in front of a church. I was walking past the Assumption Roman Catholic Church on my regular walk. And it hit me. There it was. A sign that I didn't expect to see. In front of a church. There it was. A huge sign. No, I'd say about 12 foot long, 4 feet high, placed in front. It's like one of those flags that you see, and it said in large, bold letters, "Immigrants and refugees, welcome." Let me say that one more time. Immigrants and refugees, welcome. And at the bottom of it are the characters, are the drawings of Joseph, Mary, and the infant Jesus. Making a connection to, well, again, to the example of who is that immigrant, who is that refugee, if not Joseph, Mary, and Jesus. Looking for a place. Looking for a home. And I said that. That sign was a sign in front of the church, which I did not expect. But it was also a sign of the times. That yes, this is just, we always took it for granted. I grew up in that generation where church was sanctuary. What do you mean immigrants and refugees are welcome? Of course they are. That was sanctuary. That was sacred ground. Once you went in through those doors, that was it. Nobody could touch you. I mean, when I took my vows for the priesthood, I remember thinking about that and even doing some research at the time. Somebody comes in through those doors, they are on sacred ground. Government has to stand outside of that place. Now, of course, these things have been challenged and laws have been challenged, but more than in the courts, which they have, in public opinion, and we've seen that the church is lost as the sacredness of the holiness has been lost and the secular has risen. And it's time for us to seize the sacred again. Go back to what's important. And that sign really hit me. Immigrants, refugees, you are welcome inside of this church. It is a sign of the times. That here in 2016, what we always took for granted, in 2016, we need to say it. We need to say it loud and clear. That yes, I am a Christian. I reach out. I serve other people. I am here on this world not to serve myself, but to serve a collection, to collect the collection called humanity. I am brother and sister. Each life matters. Those children matter just as much as the diplomats matter. And we are all interrelated. Black, white, green, red, we are all interrelated. So that when I see a black person, he is my brother. When I see a person of different complexion, woman, men, preferences, doesn't matter. That is my brother. That is my sister. And when I start understanding that, then I understand we are all creations of God. Therefore, how can there not be peace? You see how easy it is? Of course, we're one family. How could there not be peace? But we are who we are. And we are driven by other motives. And those other motives are what push us away from peace. So at this end of this year, so much has happened during this year. I have this opportunity to really look back on the year and say that, you know, with all the difficulties and all the challenges, and it has been one of the most challenging years of my life, having gone through a surgery at the beginning of the year, my wife went through a surgery, having survived a horrific accident and miraculously getting up through that and still with the bruises and pain, still getting over it, but still saying that thank God that we are alive. With the prospect of being sued, yes, the first time in all my life, somebody took me to court and then turning out that, you know, the court looks in favor of you and says that, what? You know, you did okay. So all kinds of stuff happened this year. And in the midst of all this, we did see some beautiful things. We saw new life coming into our world, new lives within our families. We saw harmony. We saw our ability to reach out to people. We saw goodness. We saw our ability to rise beyond our means and effectively help other people was taken out of a parish so that we could do some bigger works. And God is the director. And so we leave it in his hands to move us to God, for God to move us in the directions that he so chooses. And so at the end of this year, as I look back on the year, I see there's, yes, more opportunities to serve. That, yes, peace hasn't been achieved, but it's still a dream that we all have, a dream that we must all share. And it begins when we understand that the centrality of Christ in our lives is the only way that those dreams can come true. Now, that being said, I hope you understand when I say Christ is the way, the truth, and the life. When I say it, it's in the context of this armadoxy that makes sense now. Okay? This is one of the bigger problems people have. They come up and they take one little sentence out of it because they don't want to read the entire manual. They don't want to go through the schooling. They don't want to develop. They pull out one little sentence. Jesus says he's the way, the truth, and the life. Well, what about the Muslims? Well, what about the Jews? And all of a sudden you have this ridiculous argument going on that, you know, Jesus is going to be pulling you out and damning everybody else. And God could care less about other people and he loves only you. Ridiculous. It's ridiculous because you don't take the time to look at the entire package. And you're just treating it the same way somebody would if he said, I need my brakes done, and instead of taking it to a certified, qualified mechanic, I'm going to go to the library and check out a book on how to do my brakes, and I'll know how to do it. Now, you are a fool if you sit in that car after that man has taken care of those brakes. You are a fool. And in the same way, you are a fool when you sit down and you try to listen to these people who are out there telling you or peddling some kind of religion that they basically just picked and chose and said, this makes sense, this doesn't make sense. When you have something that's orthodoxy that takes you back to the beginning of all time, okay? Not just 2,000 years ago, takes you back 13 billion years ago to that moment of creation when everything just began. Let there be light. And you are there at that light. And that stardust, that energy is inside of you. And it continues through you, through your children, through the next generations, all in a service to God. All right. Is that a good way to end this year? I think so. Yeah, of course I think so. This is my show. Here is Susie to make the announcement one final time this year, and I'll be back in a few moments, share some closing thoughts, parting shots for this show as well as the year. Here's Susie.
Susie here again. Before continuing with today's broadcast, I'd like to take this opportunity to remind you that this podcast is made possible through your prayers and generous donations. We are now in the ninth year of producing shows which are heard around the globe. Since 2008, we've provided quality programming through podcasts, educational videos, and streams, using technology's most current resources. The message of Armenian Orthodoxy, or as Father Vazgen calls it, Armadoxy, is giving people an intelligent and practical answer to many of life's difficulties, including the challenge to bring peace to a hurting world. Please take a moment now to visit inhisshoes.org and press on the donate button. Your encouragement goes a long way. Thanks for listening and God bless. We now return to this week's Next Step with Father Vazgen.
Well, thank you, Susie, for that announcement, and thank you to all of you. What can I say? We're at the end of the year, and I cannot thank you enough for all of your support, for all your generosity, for all of your prayers. They go so far. I want a big, big shout out to those of you. I don't want to go by names, but there are some people that have really stepped into the positions. One, Mr. Kalejian, thank you so much for all that you do and your support in making this a reality. The Down Under folks, okay? The Laura Gatto, thank you so much. Upgar, had a chance to talk to him a couple days ago. Yes, Down Under, you guys are spreading the Next Step and Armadoxy in ways that only you know. Well, we do know, too, and God knows, and that's what's important. To those of you at Predator Cycling, oh, says Autumn Courtney, thank you. It is a joy just to know you, and thank you for your support. For Nick and Janine, for Anna, Maria, Anush, Lida, Mardik, all of these people that are just the warriors that I know have got my back and got this ministry in their prayers. Thank you so much for everything that you do. And there is a whole list of people that I remember all the time. Believe it or not, every time that I celebrate a divine liturgy, it is in that thankful spirit that I offer my prayers and remember all those who've asked me to pray for them. May God bless you with a lot of health and happiness into the new year. I want to take this opportunity also to, as I sign off for 2016, to thank you on behalf of this wonderful team that I have over here. My sister, a war partner with me, Anush, and we've developed a very beautiful line of scents, of fragrant oils that we're going to be premiering this week. And you'll be hearing from us. You'll be getting some. If you've been a donor, you'll be getting some in the mail. This is a very special blend used for prayer and used for meditation. and there'll be instructions in there as well. This blend is we've painstakingly taken some time to put together a blend that will reflect the spirit in exile as well as the spirit in motion. That's all I'm going to say, okay? In exile and in motion. Outside and moving. What does that mean? Oh, we'll find out, okay? It's coming up. Armenian Christmas is next week, and we've got a good show for you, and that's when we'll reveal all of this stuff. But I do want to thank, on behalf of our crew over here, my dear wife, Susan, who's been so supportive through the years and continues to be an inspiration and a driving force over here in Pasadena, California, putting a lot of things together in the backgrounds to keep us going over here. So on her behalf as well, we wish you all a very, very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year, and our love and appreciation to all of you. On behalf of the team that every week, painstakingly, and I was just talking to Susie yesterday about this, we remembered the first few years that we would put these together, the hours that we would spend, literally days that we'd spend just to put together one or two shows, and it was wild. Now we're kind of ripping them out as far as audio, video, and hopefully, I mean, we'll have to ask you. I hope that you've seen an improvement in quality rather than a decrease in quality, right? As so often happens when you put out more of the product. When quantity goes up, you tend to see a lowering in quality. I hope you're seeing just the opposite, a higher rate of quality. And on behalf of Ken, just a genius with what he does with these computers and how he gets this all put together. This is Father Boskin, thanking you very much for a beautiful 2016, wishing that all your dreams for 2017 come true, filled with health and happiness to all of you. Drop me a line. I'd love to hear from you. I'm at feedback@epostle.net. You'll find us at inhisshoes.org, as well as all the usual spaces on social media, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. Follow us, like us, do the whole bit, okay? It goes a long way. So on behalf of Susie, our producer, Ken, our engineer, this is Father Voskin inviting you to join us again next week, next year, on Theophany Eve, as we take the next step.
And now here's the fine print.
The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskulledness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of epostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.
The reason of the season.